Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. And y'all, we have debates from actual games with the entire full slate of Major League games opening this week. I'm so excited. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Shelley Verstraete, to talk through all of these debates right now. Shelley, how has our first mini baseball week been for you so far?
From a fan standpoint, it's been really good just having baseball games on the TV. Pretty much like when I'm at home and there's a baseball game on, it's on my telly. So it's like, that's great. And I don't know, like Saturday afternoon naps with baseball on, I don't know, it's like my best time to nap. Just the sound. So I had a really, really good nap on Saturday. But fantasy wise, it's not going well. I had basically every pitcher rostered that blew up this weekend. But that's okay. It's a long season.
Yeah, I am watching Louis Varland blow up as we speak, and that's not good for me because I have Louis Varland in a bunch of places. But I too have baseball on at all points in time, and it's been fun and it's been great. This week's episode is obviously coming with a massive small sample size caveat because we have like 5, 4, 3 games worth of data for most of these teams, but the fun is in debating out what we've seen so far and where we think it is going. And we are thrilled to be joined by Michael Govier, who I think of as fantasy baseball's number one hype man. You know, Govier as the host of the Palazzo podcast, 2 L's, 2 Z's. He's also just a great fantasy friend to have in your corner. He's my league mate in GLARF. How's it going, Govier?
Oh, boy, Sarah, I love doing anything together with you. We've had a nice relationship now for about 4 years. And of course, with Shelly, too. I always tell the story where I was just in the elevator with Shelly at FPAS 2021. That was cool. And then I don't think I saw her again the rest of the time.
Probably but not.
It was always a pleasure to see you when I get to see you. So I'm stoked. I love this show. It's a great idea. And I think it has a different take, a little bit of a different point of view than your typical, you know, turn on the podcast and just reel off stats.
I appreciate that. We're going for a little bit of a different vibe here because a lot of fantasy baseball shows sound the same. Our conceit is that we do this through the lens of some mini debates, right? So for those of you who might be new to the show, this is a debate podcast. So everybody has a side in each of these little mini debates that we're going to focus on. You get 3 minutes to make your case. You get 3 minutes for your opponent to make their case. The moderator role shifts, and that moderator does like a 2-minute question and answer period between each of those cases. And then we have 1-minute rebuttals for both of our debaters, and that's it. We cap it, right? So at that point in time, the debate is over. And you might agree with one person more than another person. There are no winners or losers here. The winners are the listeners, just kind of using this information to make decisions. But we try to keep it tight. We try to keep it interesting. And we'll see how this one goes. And we're going to start off with a pretty hot debate and hot news item. Frankly, I couldn't believe this when I turned on my TV last night. Ronald Blanco throws the season's first no-hitter. Shelley, you're going to moderate this debate.
Yeah, I think everyone was pretty much surprised. One, because maybe it was Blanco. I mean, I guess we'll get into that in a bit. But how it was so early. It was like one of like the earliest no-hitters like ever, like in a season. So that was like really, really cool. But just to hit it off, he, you know, threw the first no-hitter. Is it a fluke? Is it a flash to pan? Are you all in? Let's start with our guest first, Michael. What do you think?
Well, Shelley, it's simple to me. Ronald Blanco is a guy that I was looking at several times in the preseason because there was opportunities. We obviously had injuries, Justin Verlander on the shelf, Jose Urquidy. Houston rotation had openings that were available. And this is kind of a guy that didn't just show up. He was on the team last year. He didn't pitch that great. In fact, before last night, before his no-hitter, his best start was against Seattle last July 6th, and he had like 9 strikeouts. It was a solid outing, but that was like his only quality outing over, not a opening weekend small sample size, but a still relatively small sample size. But I didn't expect him to hit a no-hitter. Or I didn't expect that to happen. I didn't expect him to go out and, hey, no, right off the bat. It blew me away. But I was not surprised that he is capable. He's 30 years old. He's been around. He's not just some rookie. And with the Houston rotation issues still being so murky, it's going to be tough for him to top this. It's a no-hitter. But he had 20 swinging strikes, I believe, during this outing against the Blue Jays, which is awesome. So he can miss bats, and he's on a team that can pile up W's. So if he can stay in the rotation, I love Blanco this year. He's going to be an extreme value play, as the business likes to say.
Yeah, I really do agree. Like, Blanco, like, really interested me, like, this offseason. Sadly, I didn't get him anywhere. But, yeah. You know, like you said, like, Verlander was hurt. He had a spot. Houston has been historically really good at finding these guys, like Framber Valdez and Christian Javier. Maybe Blanco is the next guy. And, you know, I was just, like, looking at his Winter League stats. The last couple of seasons in, you know, in Winter League, he has pitched extremely well. Like, we got zero ERA, a one ERA, and that's out of, like, 20 innings each. So it's a small sample size, but he was still pretty good in Winter League. So this might be something. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like I'm debating both of you. You all have so many great insights on Blanco. I have a couple of thoughts here. And I love this for the sport, by the way. I love this for the Astros. And most importantly, love this for Ronel Blanco. I love it when a guy comes up and he's kind of unknown and he gets his shot. I was sitting on my couch at the edge of my seat, like looking at the pitch count yesterday, hoping that it would stay low enough that he'd get a chance to finish. I'm like, and I'm so glad Espada, the new manager for the Astros, understood the circumstance that, like, this is not some 23-year-old prospect that you need to protect and, like, keep really tight to a pitch count. Like, let the man have his moment. He has earned this. And also, I'm not running out to the waiver wire to pick up Ronel Blanco. I think that now it's interesting because Blanco was drafted at about 24-25% of NFBC league since February. So it's not somebody who's, like, totally off the radar of those of us who are super into the fantasy baseball game. And according to our friend of the show, Paul Sporer, he was started in, like, 73.7% of main event leagues this last weekend, right? So this is somebody who was on the radar of the most intense fantasy players. This is not somebody who just came out of nowhere. That said, this reminds me of when Wade Miley threw a no-hitter. Y'all remember that? Like, Wade Miley comes out and throws a no-hitter, and it's like, wow, we have to go get Wade Miley. You already missed the best thing that Wade Miley is going to do this season. It is all downhill from here, people. I admit, it's an intriguing arm. The Astros have a knack for developing those arms. They have a knack for giving those guys their starts. And when Justin Verlander and Jose Urquidy are well, Blanco's going back to the pen. So ride it while you can. Maybe get another great start or two. I love that it happened against the Blue Jays, who I consider to be a good offensive team. And I highly doubt anyone who started Ronel Blanco for that no-hitter is going to have him on their roster through the month of May.
Yeah, I mean, you make an excellent case, because I saw earlier today, we're recording on Tuesday, that, you know, Justin Verlander, like, threw a bullpen session and he came out fine. So he sounds like he's going to be coming back. And then that is probably really going to be between him and JP France. And at least, you know, with not looking at this start, going back to last year from looking at both of their productions last year in the majors, JP France was much better than Blanco. So he has a very, very, I think, a very, very small window. I mean, we could be seeing, you know, another great Astros pitcher coming along, but he really has to keep going, obviously not to this level, but he's got to keep this up to keep up his spot in the rotation. So it's a very, very risky kind of pickup here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my question for you, Govier, is if you don't have Blanco on your squad right now, what are you willing to put down in FAB this weekend to get Blanco on your team?
That's a completely different story. And I would put very little. I mean, I like Blanco. I talked about him in the preseason on the Palazzo podcast, Two L's, Two Z's. And I was spotlighting him on some of my spring training daily. I do the spring training daily during the preseason. And I noticed him and I got excited. But after a no-hitter, the highest achievement you can get outside of a perfect game for a pitcher, a starting pitcher, it is all downhill from there. He could be reliable, but all the points you guys just made, JP France, etc., it's not worth spending a big chunk. I'm not even saying, say, 10% of your FAB budget. Don't do that. You know, to me, I think Blanco is somebody, if you can get for, I don't think, 3 or 4% of your budget, maybe 5, but that's it. That would be the max. And I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, at the risk of turning our first debate not into a debate, I think 3% of my fab budget is where I'm kind of living with Blanco mm-hmm. this weekend. And only if I have a pitcher who either got hurt or blown up to such a degree that I'm like, holy yikes, I have some problems here, right? Like I have a couple of leagues where I had picked up DL Hall. DL Hall did not look great against the Mets, despite, I mean, the surface numbers looked good, but the stuff numbers and the velocity and a bunch of other things looked super questionable. I might want Blanco in the short term instead of DL Hall just based on those numbers. I don't even know that I'm dropping DL Hall just yet, but I'm not excited about it. And if I'm kind of looking to replace somebody who I think is like on the injured list or something, I might go $25, $30 in FAB. It's a great story. Great stories don't often make great fantasy acquisitions. And for every, like, no hitters are super weird and interesting events. I wrote a piece in 2021, I believe, for Fangraphs, looking at no hitters historically, because there was, if you remember in 2021, there was that run up of a ton of no hitters early in the season. It was like, is this the year of the no hitter? I think that might actually be the title of the piece. They're random events. Alec Mills has a no-hitter, right? Like, Jake Arrieta has two. There was a period where Jake Arrieta couldn't find the plate, but batters didn't know where the ball was going either, so they randomly swing at stuff, and Jake Arrieta got a second no-hitter after he was Cy Young Jake. I think that they are random events, in a sense, and so while they're very cool, you don't get any extra fantasy points for the no hitter aspect of it. Well, you might in a points league if you have like no hitter points or something. But for the most part, that's just like a 9-inning start, and it's a great start, and you got the win, and you should be happy about that. And I am very happy for Ronald Blanco, and I'm not bidding more than like $25 out of a $1,000 budget in FAB this weekend on him.
I would like to add just one quick thing on Blanco, is that I might bump that up to, you know, maybe 7%. I actually think he could hang around for more than just a month. Like, it could be June and Ronald Blanco could still be involved in this rotation. That's going to take some luck, because I believe his ability is definitely there. It's not going to be about his ability. It's just going to be about seniority, I think. So I want to make that clear.
And there is one good thing. I mean, he does make it. He's scheduled to make a start on Sunday. It is against the Rangers, so it's another tough offense. But at least you get another look before those weekly bits. So that's really good.
Yeah, it's a great point. I had forgotten about that. Part of the reason he was probably on so many main event rosters this week was because of the two starts and people playing that two start matchup. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we need rebuttals in this one, because I feel like we've kind of all arrived at the same place. We're very happy for Ronel, and at the same time, so, you know, he might make a difference on your roster for a couple of, the difference here is a couple of months versus, I think it's more like a month.
Yeah.
Probably.
Our second debate is actually kind of similar, and it would have been the story of the day, I think, had the Blanco no-hitter not occurred, because I happened to be freezing my tuchus off at Wrigley Field yesterday in like 40-degree drizzling rain, Chicago special home opener at Wrigley, and I was there to watch Shota and Monica absolutely shove. And here's the question for this debate. Shelley's going to moderate this one for us too, but is this the steal of the draft season, or is it going to fall apart when warmer weather hits and the wind blows out at Wrigley?
Yeah. I mean, Sarah just, you know, put it up on a tee. So I'm just going to knock it out the park. So Sarah, we'll go with you since you were at the park. What did you see?
I am in love with Shota Imanaga. And it's not just because I'm a Cubs fan. I swear I'm not just being a homer here.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. I saw a handful of things, and we were deliberately seated not quite directly behind home plate, but like just off to the first base side of home plate in the seats that are under the grandstand so that we wouldn't get wet when it started raining. First off, it's worth noting, and I think this is true for Blanco too, by the way, these are 30-year-old guys. These are not like 22-year-old rookies. These are both dudes who know how to pitch in different circumstances. Maybe we haven't seen them in the major leagues before, but they know, they are professional pitchers. And Shota came into this game with a plan. If you go look at his heat maps, the four-seamer up plays. It plays off the splitter so well. There's a Rob Friedman gif with the overlay thing that he does that is just like, how is anybody ever going to hit this as a right-handed batter? I'm not sure. I don't really know. They come out of the exact same spot. and one pitch stays up high and the other one like dives out, and good luck. Like, good luck. I don't know what you're supposed to do with that. To lefties, he's got a sweeper that is excellent. He also had 20 swings and misses on pitches, and not a single ground ball during Shohei Ohtani's debut. Like, not one ground ball during this debut. It was all fly ball outs and strikeouts. So I understand why people are a little bit concerned about the fly balls at Wrigley Field. He addressed this in his postgame. He was pitching to the weather to some extent. The wind is howling in off the lake. He's like, I don't care if it's a fly ball. Like, you can hit that high fastball. You can hit it straight to the warning track and hit it for an out. So I know people are concerned about that. And I know that was the concern with him coming in. And he looks to me like a guy who was playing to the conditions and knows he can't get away with that on a day where the wind is howling out. He also just looks like a capital D dude. It was cold at Wrigley yesterday. Craig Counsell from like Born and Bred in Milwaukee was wearing a hoodie under his jersey, like trying to stay warm in the Cubs dugout. There were heaters on in the Cubs dugout. Ibanagi came out without sleeves. He was wearing a tank top under his uniform. He's like, I'm just going to shove. The last thing that I'm going to say about Shota before I turn it over to Michael for the rebuttal to this, he comes at you with such a different look than every pitcher in the major leagues. And I think this is important for his long-term success. He's so low when he releases the ball. He's actually releasing as if he's like 5'6", as opposed to 5'9", is what I think I heard Nick Pollock or Eno Saris or one of those guys who's like really good at pitching say. And so what you get is a rising fastball, four seam, that's coming from a 5'6" arm slot. And I honestly don't think any of the Rockies hitters knew what to do with it. And I don't think that's because they're the Colorado Rockies. I think that's because nobody in baseball comes at you like that.
So Michael, what did you think about the showing? Do you believe Sarah, or do you just think it was just a case of Rocky Road?
Oh man, I used to love Rocky Road when I was a kid. It's my favorite ice cream. I'm not kidding. I always had Rocky Road, and then I grew up and I lost the taste. I don't know. It's so strange how our palates change like that. It's so good. Now I just don't care. But we should mention this start was against the Rockies, like the worst organization, arguably, in all of baseball outside of the Oakland A's. They're just not good, and that needs to be mentioned. And also, best value in the draft, like looking back now, it's early on that. I know, like we're just getting underway here. It was a great start. I was happy for Shota. He seems like a really knowledgeable, wise, locked-in dude, a lot of talent, who's in the kind of prime, tail end prime, maybe he's still in his prime. I'm willing to concede that, but I am concerned about those fly balls in Wrigley. In fact, I was so concerned with Wrigley, and I know it's April, by the way, Metro Detroit, where I live, we're just like Chicago. So that's always the home opener. Yeah. 35 degrees, drizzle, cold as hell. Yeah. That's just the way it is. And we're used to that. But in the end, I was concerned about starting in my main event team another newcomer to MLB this year, Mr. Yamamoto, because I was afraid of Wrigley on Friday, his first Wrigley start. I'm like, what if the wind's blowing out? What if it's a nightmare? Like, and that's a guy who was drafted obviously much higher than Shota was. So Wrigley Field freaks me out. It could be a problem. That division is better than people thought, too. That does concern me. Like the Pirates, I'm not surprised at all. I thought the Pirates might make the playoffs. There's a lot of fun brewing in the NL Central, a lot of talent. I know the schedule's more balanced now, so it's not as intense within the division. But I think there's still some... I need to see more from Imanaga before I commit.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way as you, Gravier. I didn't hear about Imanaga. I need to work on his last name.
Imanaga. I've been working on it too, and I know I've already said it two different ways during this podcast. I learned it wrong at first, and it's just going to be a challenge. Yeah, I'm trying.
I have those names as well. And this might be another one, but anyway, even if he was playing to the weather, it's still the barrel percentage and the hard hit rate from that start is still concerning. He had a 16.7% barrel percentage and a 66.7% hard hit percentage. And yes, I mean, maybe I'll grant him that he was playing to the weather, but that's still kind of, that's really scary. What do you think about that, Sarah?
I understand why people think that's scary.
Yeah.
I think it's scary if the guy is inexperienced and it looks like it's just a lot of bad luck. I have decided that this dude is an elite veteran. And now I might be wrong about this, right? He's going to learn some things through the league and he's going to have moments that don't look great. I was watching in spring training during his first start when Andy Pajas, this like that guy from the Dodgers who was like just hitting tons of home runs to start the season, took him deep at Sloan Park. And it was exactly like he just ran into one of those high fastballs and it was a little bit too much in the zone and boom, gone, right? And also, if the thing about Shota that blows my mind so far that I don't think we're talking about enough, in 12 and a third innings of spring training, he struck out 25 guys and walked three. Yesterday, in his first MLB start, he struck out 9 and walked 0. So I'm actually kind of fine if all he does is give up a long home run every now and again. Like, if his starts are, I'm going to strike out 9 or 10 guys, I don't walk anyone, and the three people who make contact hit it to the bleachers, I trust the Cubs offense to put up more than 3 runs. I think this is still a really good pitcher. He took a no-hitter into 2 outs into the 6th inning before he finally gave up a single to Charlie Blackmon. And Charlie Blackmon had good contact against him twice. I don't think that this is a guy who is unhittable, but it sort of reminds me of, you know, when Yu Darvish is really, really good and Yu Darvish is striking out everybody and he's not walking everybody and he gives up 2 solo home runs. Man, if that's what the Cubs got for Shota, that's great. And I'm looking at his ADP since February 1st. I'm going to exclude some of the crazy early drafts that we all did. What, 172. He went right before Bryce Miller, right before Jordan Montgomery, right before Christian Javier. I don't know, man. That seems like a steal at that part of the draft for a guy who might have a whip under 1 and strike out at more than a batter in any.
Yeah, that's very true. I, as someone who has Bryce Miller everywhere and just got destroyed by the Red Sox this weekend, I'm really, really disliking my choice. Gavia, did you have any rebuttal?
It's worth noting that the opposing pitcher for opening day at beautiful Wrigley Field, where Sarah Sanchez has spent lots of her time over the years, and I appreciate that. She's a diehard. There's not enough diehards anymore, so I commend you. I always respect that about you. However, the guy pitching for the Rockies was Dakota Hudson, who stinks. He's not very good, okay? Yes, there's moments, and there's probably been a few analysts throughout the annals of fantasy baseball history who have actually been Dakota Hudson people. Like, oh, I'm in. This is the guy. Because there's always somebody for every player, it seems like, eventually. But he had a good outing, and he didn't get hardly any swing strikes, but the weather was in his favor. So I think that's a mark against Imanaga right now. I'm just saying, Dakota Hudson's not very good, and we need to see more.
I hear you on the Dakota Hudson thing, because I was keeping score, as I do. If you follow me on Twitter, you know that I keep score at every game that I go to. The big difference between what Dakota Hudson did and what Shota Imanaga did is that Dakota Hudson struck out 1 batter, walked 2, and gave up a handful of hits. Shota gave up 2 hits, struck out 9, walked 0. And Chris Konka, who is a great baseball historian, stats follow on the Twitter machine. If you do not follow Chris Konka, you should. Maybe one of the steals of the Cubs offseason, because they got him over to the Chicago, to the north side from the south side. He used to do a bunch of White Sox stuff. Noted that 34 strikeout to 3 base on balls in the first 18 innings of Shota's career is unbelievably good. And if you want to go look at what that K rate is, it's up there, not with Jacob DeGrom. It's higher than Jacob DeGrom. It's up there with relievers. It's up there with like Aroldis Chapman and Felix Bautista. So I'm not saying that that's going to persist. Again, it's the Rockies, but those are elite, elite K to walk ratios. Not like, I don't know, man. This does not. Let me pose this question a slightly different way. Maybe not steal of the draft season, but would you rather start Shota Imanaga right now or Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Because I would rather start Shota.
No. No. Yamamoto.
You just said you're not stopping him at Wrigley. I am.
What? Yamamoto can do what Imanaga can do in terms of limiting the walks, excellent elite control. Plus, he's got a better team behind him. So that's a difference. And yes, he's younger than Imanaga. So it's possible that right now, he is Imanaga slightly more advanced than Yamamoto. I'm willing to possibly concede that because Yamamoto's only 25. But I think I'd rather. I see your point, but I can't do it. I think we're just seeing that Yamamoto struggled in his opener out in Korea against the Padres. And right now, he hasn't been showing a dominant, like, oh, I'm here, I have arrived start. He hasn't had that yet, but he will. So I'm not going to let recency bias slip in here. I'm going to remain calm.
Fair enough. And if it's a keeper league, I'm definitely taking Yamamoto. I will also be at Yamamoto's Wrigley debut on Friday, so I'll definitely come back and tell y'all about that.
I hope he doesn't blow up because my partner, my co-manager on my main event team, he's like, we got to put him back in. We can't bench him. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope it works out. I'm freaking out.
I'll send you text messages from the bleacher.
Please do. Thank you.
We need to take a quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, we have some more debates reacting to the first few days of baseball. But first, a quick break. All right. I get to moderate this one because, frankly, this is a pitcher I was not very in on all draft season. I don't have Bailey Ober anywhere. He had one of the worst starts of this early 2024 season so far. 8 earned runs in an inning and a third. The season has Bailey begun. Are we over it or into it already? And I think we'll start with Govia. You're our guest. You get to kick us off one more time with the first debate.
Well, I got to tell you what. I have Bailey Ober in only one league, okay? And I lucked out because I didn't wake up in time to start him. It was a daily roster. It's Aru Niu. So it's actually the Palazzo Niu. It's our first year of trying a bunch of Palazzo people together for an Aru Niu league, which I'm a big fan of. I love their format. But I lucked out. I was spared the disaster that was Bailey Ober's start. And I'm a lucky boy. Very lucky boy. But I still think there's a lot there. I'm very excited about Bailey Ober as the season progresses. And I never want to panic. I don't want to freak out after a bad start. You know, Tristan McKenzie last night, he let me down. But I'm not dumping him. I'm not bailing. And the same goes for Bailey Ober. Bailey Ober, he did show that he kind of got, I think he got ripped in that his last spring / exhibition start before opening day. And some people were like, oh boy, this doesn't look great. And then he continued and stunk it up in his debut for the regular season. But I'm not worried. I remain calm. I trust in his stuff. I believe in the Twins. I think the Twins are becoming a very sneaky starting pitcher haven. They're not the Cubs. They're not the Cubs level. They're not the Rangers level. They're not the Dodgers level, right? There's other teams that are, they have a ton of respect. They've earned the right to say, we know starting pitching. Cleveland, of course, too. But Minnesota, I'm getting more impressed by what they've been able to do with their rotation the last couple of years. They've made adjustments. And I'm just going to sit there and say, I have to wear this Bailey Ober nightmare. It happened. I cannot undo it. But I have to stay the course and know that come July, I'll have Bailey Ober and he's mowing down 8 people instead of giving up 8 earned runs at a start. And I'll be like, well, I'm really glad I didn't panic. I mean, that sucked in April. I have to wear that and live with it. But man, I'm so glad I've got Bailey Ober on my roster now.
Yeah, it's interesting how those starts early in a season just like hit you differently than they would in June or July. I drafted Yamamoto in my OC and I was debating it a little bit, but he had fallen so far that I was just like, okay, I'm not letting y'all, like, I'm not letting this pitcher who I thought was, you know, potential first round value a week ago fall anymore because of one bad inning in Korea. And I feel pretty good about that. Like, I don't have any concerns about it. I'm like, I'm very happy to ride out the rest of Yamamoto's season, that one blip aside. I watched John Lester have a start like that once in like July against the Mets, and it barely dinged his ERA, right? Because he had already thrown down like a 2.5 ERA. And by the time he did that start, it's like, oh, now it's a 2.8 ERA. It's just when you see that like 145 or 54 or something staring you in the face, it looks so much worse. That said, there are some people who have some concerns about Ober, and Shelley, you are one of them. Why are you anti-Ober?
I'm just having like major just you know, fantasy scaries, because I have him in quite a few leagues, even like some dynasty leagues, and just watching that particular start, it was against the Royals. I mean, I think they're a little bit better than they were last year, right? But it's still, you know, it's still Kansas City, and it was in Kansas City. It wasn't in Minnesota. But what scares me is he's always been a fly ball pitcher, and he kind of does have a slightly like high-ish walk rate. So unlike Shota, he is going to get pounded by, he's going to walk someone and then maybe walk two people, give up a hit, and then there's a grand slam or something like that. And that's something that scares me kind of about the Twins, especially like Ryan and Ober. Like they're both high home run, like fly ball pitchers. And that just scares me. I mean, I don't mean to be like a conspiracy theorist, but there seems to be like a lot of runs that's been scored so far. So maybe they play with the ball. I don't know. It just, it scares me. I'm just like, I really wish that I was in leagues shallow enough to drop him because I'm scared. But a lot of these leagues are 15 team and I'm like, there's no one really else on the wire. So I'm just going to have to just bear the brunt of maybe some really rocky starts.
Yeah. I mean, the 15 team waiver wire is brutal. And this is a question for both of you, actually, related to Ober, because we've been talking about pitching so much to start this episode. It feels to me like the 15 team waiver wire is worse than it's ever been. Like if there was a pitcher who was able to get five innings and potentially qualify for a win and their whip wasn't terrible, they got scooped up in the late rounds of a 15 teamer this year in spaces where people might have speculated on a prospect before. And I know I did this because there are a couple of leagues where I was like, Martin Perez and Jose Quintana, come on down, because I just didn't want to have to deal with spending fab on them later. For both of you, are you seeing pitchers that you're super interested in on the waiver wire right now? And particularly if you've got like a Bailey Ober or you've got someone who had one of these blow up starts, is there someone you're interested in replacing them with? And Govier, I'll start with you.
Well, like I said, we're not replacing Bailey Ober yet. I'm going to stay the course. I have to admit, though, Shelley, he had one swinging strike in that. And he only threw 53 pitches against the Royals. One. There was one whiff on all those pitches. That's bad. That is not good. Yeah, that freaks me out. And on the other, flip side of that start, again, looking at our counterparts, Brady Singer was dominant against the Twins. And so it's not like it was all about the weather or something. You know, the Royals scored 11 runs. And I also take offense, by the way, to you disparaging the Royals' offense. You didn't totally dump on them, but I love this Royals' offense this year. In fact, the AL Central is reborn this year. The Tigers finally shed Miguel Cabrera. He's out, and they feel free to start this new era, and they've been kicking butt. And the Royals' offense is really, really good, especially from a fantasy perspective. I dig the Royals' offense a lot. The Twins, even Cleveland, it's fun. I mean, the White Sox are the worst of the worst, unfortunately, but there's still a few gems there. Bottom line is this. As far as pitchers that are available on the waiver wire, 15-teamers, I wouldn't drop Bailey Ober for almost any of them. I look at some of the names, for example, in my main event 15-team free agent pool, which is a very competitive league, obviously. A guy like Alec Marsh, no, I'm not going to drop Bailey Ober for Marsh, although I do like Marsh. I'm not going to drop him for Kyle Hendricks there. I'm not doing that. Graham Ashcroft of the Reds, maybe I could see that if Ober keeps stinking it up, but no. I think you're kind of right, but yeah, you're actually kind of right, Sarah. I think you're right. It's not a lot of great options.
I mean, I wouldn't drop Bailey Ober for Kyle Hendricks. So, like, let's be clear. I'm not advocating that anyone drop Bailey Ober for Kyle Hendricks. Shelley, you mentioned the waiver wire situation, though, and I think you're right. Like, are you seeing that in your 15-teamers as well? Because for me, I'm looking at pitching options, and outside of being able to pick up, like, Luis Gil or Ryan Nelson or Jared Jones or, like, guys who didn't get drafted in earlier drafts, I'm not seeing a lot.
Yeah, and they're going for like Buku's bucks. I tend to be a little bit maybe too conservative at the beginning of the year because I don't want to run out of money at the end. So I usually miss out on like the Luis Gils and Ryan Nelsons and stuff like that. But yeah, I've been maybe picking up like some interesting relievers. And honestly, I picked up Ryan Yarbrough because he's pitching like the bulk inning in it with the Dodgers. And I'm like, maybe I can pick up a couple wins here and there. You never know. So that was a guy that I kind of picked up. I mean, I'm not going to drop over for him, of course, but, you know, take a ride, see what happens.
It's so interesting that you mentioned the bulk relief guy, because one of the guys that I have on a 15 teamer that I care a lot about, it might even be Glarf. I'm not sure if it's Glarf, but it's definitely one of my 15 teamers, is Matt Strom for that reason. And when I was looking at waiver wire pickups, I did not drop Matt Strom this week, because one of the things I've got in the back of my head is Spencer Turnbull is about to make a start for the Phillies. And who do I think is going to vulture that win? If Spencer Turnbull is not terrible for the Phillies, it is Matt Strom. And I want Matt Strom around for the 7 to 9 wins that he's going to vulture at some point this season with excellent ratios and pretty good strikeout rates. And so I'm just going to keep Matt Strom hanging out there, and I'd rather have him than Kyle Hendricks. Sorry, Kyle.
And another guy you could throw in the mix there, bulk-wise, Shelby Miller of the Tigers. Yeah, could pitch 2 innings here and there. He's kind of playing that role, getting wins. But I'm so glad that you brought up Ryan Yarbrough. Shelley, I love it. Yes. Yes. I have been locked in on him all offseason, and he's an afterthought. He was easily draftable in deep leagues, too. Nobody cares. And I know he doesn't strike out guys much, but he's got good ratios, and he plays for a team in the Dodgers that can give you wins. He can take wins from starters. He can get those like he did the other day. He got the long save, right? The long multi-inning save, which is unusual. So I see a lot of benefits with Yarbrough, and I think he's the kind of guy who won't give you a ton of Ks, but could really help your staff, especially if you're not seeing a lot on the wire right now. I think that's I couldn't have said it better myself. I completely agree with you. It's like you read my mind. I love Yarbrough. I'm a big fan. I really am.
All right. Do we need rebuttals here? It sounds like both of you are on we're a little bit worried about Ober, but nobody's dropping him, right? Like everybody, no. We all agree that like Ober, cause for concerns. Don't overreact though, because there's not much on the waiver wire to replace him with unless you want to go with one of these middle relief options.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Speaking of, we were talking about the White Sox a second ago. We're gonna go to the offensive side of things here. We're gonna leave the pitching debate step behind for a minute and look at a White Sox in comparison to a Red. Not Sox, just a Red. Luis Robert Jr. and Ellie De La Cruz have shockingly similar stats so far this season. A 52.9% K rate, yikes. A 5.9% walk rate, kind of also yikes. 250 average and a 294 on base percentage, but all of us in draft season had them going similar to each other right around that second, third-ish round. So the question here is, these are similar draft values. Who finishes with the better roto season? And I am going to moderate this debate. Shelley, I'm going to have you start us off this time.
I just thought, you know, I was just like perusing, like, just like, you know, Fangraphs, like leaderboards. And I'm like, these are like shockingly similar. And I thought it would be a good debate. So here we are. For me, it was honestly like really easy. It is Ellie every day of the week. He plays in the better ballpark. He has the better team. I think he has like the... It sounds really, really bad to speak ill of Luis Robert Jr., but I just like Ellie. I think that he is more exciting to watch. And sometimes in fantasy leagues, I like to, you know, roster players that I like to watch and I think that are, you know, fun guys. And I just think that Ellie has more to show, because we probably saw Luis Robert Jr.'s best season last year. I think Ellie can do that and maybe more. I mean, he was so electric in the minors, and maybe I'm just so infatuated about everything and all the clips and all the tweets with the videos that I saw of Ellie last year. Maybe it's totally, you know, giving me rose colored glasses, right? But it's definitely Ellie for me.
I mean, the team context alone is probably the thing that would push me towards Ellie here. And the upside, I guess, he's so young, man. It's like, I believe Ellie can change some things around. Govia, you've got the Luis Robert Jr. side of this. And I'm going to say, I probably would take this side too, just because it's such a proven, he's such a proven player, right? Like, we know who he is. The issue has always been injuries. Make your case for Luis Robert Jr. finishing with a better roto season than Ellie De La Cruz.
Fantasy baseball can really put you in a strange mood. last year, I was really big on Luis Robert. I wanted him badly. I wanted Lou Bob. I had to have him. And I thought he would be a first-round player end of season. It was a good season. It was a great season. It wasn't quite first round, but it was close. You know, 38 home runs, 20 steals. The problem is, though, 25-ish walks, I believe, with like 172 Ks. That is not the ratio we're looking for from Lou Bob. And the problem with Ellie is, of course, he misses a lot of balls, as you already laid out. So Robert's more advanced right now. Ellie's the shinier new prospect. There's no doubt about it. He's more exciting. And Luis Robert's an exciting player, but Ellie actually is more exciting than him. I concede that. But Luis Robert is honed his craft, had a few seasons now to learn the ways of the pitchers that he faces. And I still would like to see the batting average bump up for Robert. I don't know if that's going to happen this year. But I wish I had drafted Robert Moore. Robert Moore. No, his name's Luis Robert, but his name's not Robert Moore. But I was thinking that when I did a comparison of Luis Robert and Michael Harris of the Braves back during the preseason on the Palazzo YouTube, I was been doing these two little mice player comparisons, and I took Harris over Robert there, but I would take Robert over Ellie here, even though I drafted Ellie in our main event in the second round, because I just trusted that Ellie could run more. But otherwise, the contact is a little better for Robert, even though he's still got some work to do. So give me Luis Robert, because he's just more advanced right now. In a dynasty format, I could see, of course, everybody's going to want Ellie because they see a 50-50 season down the pike, right? But I'm going to take Robert. I feel pretty good about taking Mr. Robert.
It's such an interesting choice because they have such different experience levels right now. Like, Ellie is the toolsy guy who we have not seen do it yet. Robert is the guy who we know can do it if he can stay healthy. I think that Shelley's right that the team context goes to the Reds. I think that Govier is right that the player experience context in a redraft format goes to Robert. Michael, you mentioned that the choice between like him and, say, Harris, for example, you would have gone with Harris. I'm going to throw another name that goes in a similar draft position who has a hot start here this season. Adolis Garcia. Are you taking Adolis over both of these guys based on what he's doing right now? Because the profile is similar. It's a lot of swing and miss. It's a lot of power. It's a lot of speed. It's all of the things. Where are you at with if I throw Adolis into this mix?
I haven't drafted Adolis at all. I didn't in the preseason. I don't know why. I had this aversion like, oh, he was so good. And he's shown growth. You know, over the last 2 to 3 years, he's shown tremendous progress. But I thought the Rangers, World Series winners, there might be a hangover. It's hard to get going again. But I could be wrong. I could really be looking back and saying, boy, why didn't I get at least one share of Adolis Garcia? He's awesome. But I still would rather have... That lineup is so good, though. Again, team context lineup. Texas Rangers, that's a fun lineup to be a part of. I still think the Reds are just as comparable to the Rangers. And obviously, the White Sox are just in third. So knowing that, I think I'm going to stick with Luis Robert for redraft. But it's very close. It might be closer than I realized with Garcia because they are very similar players in several categories. And Ellie's the younger guy on a team that's still trying to prove himself. And he strikes out a lot more. And if he keeps missing bats, it's going to... I'm also concerned that if he loses playing time for any reason, Ellie De La Cruz, that's going to be a... I'm going to look back and be like, oh, man, I can't believe I drafted that guy that high. And he started becoming a platoon player. Not long term, but that might happen this season, possibly.
Yeah, the playing time concerns don't really exist for those other two players. Although, I feel like for the Reds, they have had so much bad injury luck and the Noel V. Marte suspension early that I'm not sure the playing time concerns exist for the Reds anymore. Like, there were a couple of Reds that I drafted higher than I probably should have in like Spencer Steer, Jake Fraley, TJ. I'm feeling great about that right now. I'm like, oh, these guys are definitely going to play. Excellent. But I didn't feel good about that coming out of draft season. Shelley, you mentioned Ellie's upside and you do a ton of prospect work. I know that you know that growth curve for prospects. Do you think, and clearly like you're on the Ellie side of this, but how likely is it he can like overcome some of those strikeout issues and eclipse Luis Robert's production in the short term?
I mean, we kind of saw it go down last year and then come back up. Even in his struggles last year, his plate discipline did improve. I mean, the BABIP was horrible, which it, you would think that someone is, you know, as speedy as him, his, he could hit through that BABIP. But we saw better swing decisions as the season went on last year. And yes, he is just like a small little ball of clay. We still don't know what he's going to be, but I still think that he has the ability to improve that. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to, he's definitely not going to win a batting title, but I mean, if he hits like 270, that would be, you know, that would be awesome. And you know, I think that he could stay on the field. Luis Robert, outside of last year, has always had trouble with injuries, and you know, Ellie really hasn't coming up through the minors. So that is one other maybe plus for Ellie versus Robert.
All great points. Shelley, you started us off here. I'm going to give you the first rebuttal. Ellie versus Luis Robert. And remember, this is for the full fantasy season in a redraft league. So as much as we all agree that like Ellie is the kid in keeper leagues, At the end of this season, if you drafted Ellie, why are you happy about it?
Because the Reds, you know, won the NL Central. Sorry, Sarah. And he just goes off. He hits, you know, 30 home runs, you know, steals 30 bases, and you know, he, you know, drives in like 95 because, you know, the Reds do have a pretty good offense even without, you know, all their injuries and drama aside. But yeah, I mean, he is like Ellie is like what I consider like a huge room player, high ceiling, low floor. But I think that he's going to reach the ceiling more than he's going to bring it down low and touch floor.
Love it. All right, Govier, your last minute for why it's Mr. Robert Jr.
I do want to say I am banking. I've been banking on a Ellie De La Cruz season of like 80 steals for real. He is so reminiscent of Eric Davis to me, a guy who could fly before he got injured. Sadly, his career wasn't the same after that, and he could hit for power. It was really a lot of fun. He was a great fielder too. Eric Davis, never forget. But Luis Robert is coming into his prime now here. He's worked out the kinks. He's had challenges. Yes, Sarah and Shelly, there are injury issues. Yes, Robert had a lot of day-to-days labeled on his player page last year. It was kind of frustrating to roster him and be like, oh, man, every day I feel like I got to deal with, is Robert going to play? Is he healthy? But he was able to play enough. It was just really frustrating day-to-day. Bottom line, Robert, elite talent. Tons of power, 40 home runs and 30 steals. Very doable for him in a lineup where he can do whatever he wants. And there are a few players in the Chicago White Sox lineup where Robert can get his stats pumped up a little bit more. There's guys who can get on base and who can score around him. It's not a great team, but the White Sox still have some talent. So I think Robert is the safer play in 2024.
Love it. Great debate, y'all. We're going to do one more debate before our next break. And this one is timely as we are recording because Abner Uribe is in the game to close out a one-run lead for the Milwaukee Brewers. It is his third save opportunity so far this season. There was a fourth save opportunity. It went to Yoel Pryams, but it was after Uribe had pitched in back-to-back games. And we're on Milwaukee closer watch, people, and I think that this – I'm not sure this outing is going to give us any answers. It might give us more questions. Shelley's going to moderate this debate.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, we kind of talked about this last week and, you know, I was on the Yoel Pryams one of this one. And so far it's not looking too great for my side. So we'll start with Govier. Who do you got for the Milwaukee closer watch?
Oh boy. I really love Uribe, but I was seeing him as a future asset. Although he did play last year. He was called up. He played in Milwaukee last year. But, you know, other guys like Pamps. I call Pamps. I just love calling him Pamps. I don't know why. I can't get it out of my head. I keep saying it for the last 2 weeks. And I roster him in a couple leagues. He got a save after Uribe had back-to-back saves against the Mets. So we've clearly seen that he's in the mix. And if Uribe falters at all here, it's his job. And then he got the Devin Williams shadow, right? It's hanging over this. Like, boy. Is he going to come back in June or July? And will he have lost his role entirely by then? Will it be all Uribe? Will it be all somebody else? And it looks like, you know, the Brewers have set the tone here on how they plan to use their back end of the bullpen. In fact, they've been one of the most reliable teams here through the first 5 days or so of how their back end works, right? Which is comforting. But these things don't last. And in today's world, high leverage situations, hardcore crunch time, divisional games where you want your best reliever in the most high pressure situation, that might not be a save. It might not be useful for a save. So your Uribe could be using there, and then you got Piamps mixed in, and then McGill too. So I think that this bullpen's a lot more cloudy. It looks very clear cut, and people spent millions of dollars of fab on Uribe recently. But I think this is still a unresolved situation that come a month from now, we could be seeing a different version of where Piamps is the guy in control as Uribe tries to regain his own pitching control. How about that, huh?
I mean, it's funny that you went to control as the thing for your case, because I'm team Uribe here. I have Uribe in a handful of spots. I like Uribe a lot. And I'm watching him right now, and he just walked the leadoff man. And I'm like, why are you walking the leadoff man? Don't walk the leadoff man in a one-run game. That's bad. Uribe has gotten 3 of the 4 save opportunities so far for this Milwaukee bullpen. And I think that that's telling us that their new coach, Pat Murphy, I think, definitely, it's definitely like an Irish-y name. If it's not Pat Murphy, it's something very similar. Pat Murphy is in on Uribe as his guy at the back end of games for right now. And if you spent your oh my god dollars and fab on Abner Uribe, you have the correct answer for today. But the problem for Uribe is that he's 23 years old and that control does not always play the way they want it to. And he just walked the leadoff man. And that's nerve-wracking for me as a person who has Uribe in a few key spots. The reason I'm going to sit on Uribe here as my choice for this job right now, the sinker is stupid. It's unbelievable. It is an unhittable pitch. When he gets it to where he wants it to be, that 99 to 101 mile per hour down, play it off that slider, I don't think that's a hittable pitch. I know that Pete Alonso hit a home run over the weekend. I think that was luck more than anything else. He's that fastball swung and he's Pete Alonso, so he made that ball go very far away. That might happen every now and again. I don't think that that is going to be the outcome for all of those pitches. Uribe in this, and he just got his third save. He just locked down his third save. So like power to him. He's not throwing strikes in this outing. That sinker is below the zone. The slider is off the zone. If the Twins had just like taken their walks instead of trying to swing at pitches that were not strikes, I think this ninth inning would still be going on. And that's the problem for Uribe. And so as much as I believe he is the closer right now, and I'm happy that I have him where I have him, I'm not so sure I'm going to be that happy in May if he loses that job and I spent $200 a fab on Abner Uribe.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I was like leaning more towards Piamps, because one, I like that he was older because I was afraid that Milwaukee was going to be cheap, but that, you know, I have egg on my face because they seem to not really care about that, which blows my mind. But what has been, again, this is only 2 innings outside of the game that's currently going on. Uribe's swinging strike rate is actually like not that great. It's 6.9% versus Piamps, which is 27.3. Again, it's 2 innings, so that could be like 2 swings, right? So, but yeah, I think for right now that the smart play is to grab Uribe, but have the quick trigger finger. Like if you see him really, really like have like a, you know, massive walk game, maybe just, you know, go change out the directions.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point in terms of keeping an eye on the situation. I think the situation is fluid. I don't think the situation is set. And this actually really hurt me in fab this weekend as I was doing some bids, because I do have a handful of spots where I've done like the closer spec and the closer thing. So I've got like Alzolay and then I've got Neris, or I've got Piamps and I've got Uribe. A lot of those were late draft situations where I was able to pick up both of them. They're not like places where I fabbed both of them because that would be a waste of fab resources. But I found myself sitting there on Sunday like, oh, I should obviously drop Piamps and pick up this other arm that I really like. And I didn't, because I was like, I'm not sure Piamps is going to lose. Like, we might be a week and a half away from Piance picking up a bunch of stuff. And he already has one, so it's like he's not hurting me, right? He's still doing useful things. If Uribe gets two saves a week and Piance gets one, I don't know. That's terrible for the Cubs because it means the Brewers are winning a ton of games. But it's excellent for my fantasy team, right? And this feels like a fluid situation to me. The other element here that you both alluded to, but I just want to call it out. McGill is the guy that gets used in the highest leverage. He's the guy that comes in to face the heart of the lineup time and time again. And so I think that I'm team Uribe here. If I have both of those guys on my lineup, Piance is on the bench and Uribe's in my lineup. And I feel very not strongly about this.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be stressful no matter who you decide to agree with, Sarah or Govier, or if you want to go with the McGill route. It's going to be stressful until we actually know, and then we might not know. And yeah, it's just going to be one of those things where maybe you should roster two and hopefully you get, 75% of all the Milwaukee saves. So,
Govia, you have any final say on this Milwaukee closer situation?
I think it's worth noting here that Pamps has a career home run per nine of one. So every nine innings, he gives up one home run, right? It's not god-awful. It could be worse, but it's something I think about in Miller Park. Also, with Uribe being young, yes, but he also had experience last year. And Pamps is only 25. So it's not like Pamps has been around a long time and he's the old veteran. You got to remember that gap there is slight. It's only 2 years between Uribe and Pamps. And McGill is a guy who's the wild card here. If somehow this rotation changes up, it'll be scary. And they'll be like, oh no, now we all got to get McGill. And as soon as you get McGill, then he probably goes right back to just being a high leverage guy in crucial situations, not the closer. I see a lot of saves amongst this bullpen this year. I really do. I think there'll be double digit saves. I agree with you, Sarah, to a certain extent. Double digit saves between at least two guys, not named Devin Williams, in this bullpen this year.
Yeah, what a world to be the Milwaukee Brewers and to be like, oh, we have like three guys who could save after our elite closer went down, like twiddle our thumbs and figure it out. This is why the Brewers have been the thorn in the side of the Cubs and everybody else in the division for so long. You might not get 30 out of one of these guys, but you might get 15 out of multiple of them, which is just bonkers to me. Our final debate today, we're going to come to it as soon as we do a quick break for our sponsors, but you will not want to miss it. We've got a really intriguing player option and choice coming up, and then we have our Love It and Leave It, of course. So stick with us through a quick break. All right, y'all. We are back. Oswaldo Cabrera, in the post-hype sleeper mode, comes in and is raking for the New York Yankees, and Shelley is going to moderate this debate.
Yeah, who saw this one coming? Like I was kind of in on him like last draft season, right? Because he had like a good 2022 campaign. And I dropped him very, very quickly because he wasn't that great. But he has been like absolutely electric. I mean, the Yankees have been just electric. Like, they haven't lost a game, which just breaks my Boston fan heart. But all right, so let's get into this. Cabrera. He basically has a stranglehold at third base while DJ LeMahieu, he broke his foot. So he's probably going to be out honestly, who knows how long. So do you ride the hot hand or do you just go pick up someone else on the waiver wire who could have quote unquote, an everyday job for a lockdown everyday job for the remainder of the season? Sarah, we'll kick it off with you.
I was in on Cabrera everywhere this weekend and I didn't get him anywhere and I'm really sad about it. I am so in on Cabrera. I was in on, like Shelley, I was in on Cabrera last season. I had him on a handful of teams. I drafted him and then clearly didn't happen. And I try really hard to not be the drafter who forgets about the guys I was in on last draft season. And then this draft season, I don't draft them when they just were out for injury reasons or they didn't get playing time or they just didn't make it happen or whatever. Like I tried to remember who those guys were and mea culpa, y'all. I forgot about Oswaldo Cabrera and I should not have, but in my defense, I think the Yankees forgot about Oswaldo Cabrera too, because the second they heard DJ LeMahieu was hurt, they went and traded for John Birdie. like John Birdie was the solution to their utility problems. And Cabrera has just forced himself into this conversation. He was supposed to start for one day while John Birdie made his way from Miami to wherever it is the Yankees are playing right now. And guess what? I'm not sure John Birdie's going to play at all because Cabrera is raking and he does not look like he's giving that job up anytime soon. I didn't bid enough this weekend to get him. I got shut out. I'm really sad about it. I wish I had bid more. And the last thing I'm going to say here, you know, I was just talking to some friends of mine who are trying to figure out how they're going to replace Josh Young on their fantasy roster. It is bleak out there if you want to replace a corner infielder. And so if you were lucky enough to get Cabrera, Godspeed, my friends. This is going to work out well for you.
Yeah, and I heard like an interesting tidbit. What podcast was I listening to? Was it Rates and Barrels, I think? Anyway, Cabrera actually worked with Juan Soto this spring, which is like music to my ears. I'm like, yeah, like go learn how to hit from Juan Soto. Like, come on. So I don't know if it is just a hot hand. And like you, Sarah, I totally forgot about him too. I was the dumb person who drafted DJ LeMahieu everywhere because I could get him late and he was supposed to lead off. And now I'm scouring the waiver wire for some type of help. But Govier, what say you?
Look, I disagree about third base having corner infield issues. I don't see that. I see some guys I like, and I'm talking in even in 14, 15 teamers. You know, guys like J.D. Davis of Oakland. This guy who got called up, Trey Lipscomb of Washington, after Nick Senzel broke his thumb during the pregame. Is the same place.
That's the most Nick Senzel ever.
Sorry. Isn't it? Yeah. That is truly one of those cases where, like, if you wrote it that way, it'd be like, no, come on, that's too obvious. Nope, that's what happens. It's Nick Senzel. It's just very sad. But Lipscomb's interesting. He's come out hot. As far as Cabrera himself, this is a guy who was given an opportunity in 2022, as Shelley alluded to. He showed promise. It was like, oh, this guy might have something here. But there was also other players in the mix, like Peraza, right? And, of course, the arrival of Volpe. And DJ LeMahieu, who's been around for a while with the Yankees. So it looked like in 2023, Oswaldo Cabrera was opened up to another opportunity. But the Yankees' offense stunk last year. It was so bad. And right away, the Yankees' defense and offense and everything looks much better. But the key part being that they can hit more. Juan Soto is taking longer at bats like he does. He's so good at such a young age. It's incredible what he's done with his career already. He draws walks. He's patient. And he's shown the rest of the team how to take an at bat in the Bronx. And Oswaldo is one of those guys who's learning from him. Will that rub off? Just because they worked out together or trained together or just learned from each other doesn't mean that Soto will rub off on Cabrera. So I think that, unfortunately, Cabrera's kind of shown us who he is. But at the same time, the Yankees offense was so horrible last year that it's probable that Cabrera will be a little better this season. But it's not somebody I'm dying to have in my roster. Though he does have excellent positional eligibility. I think like second, third, short, and outfield, depending on Yahoo anyways. And that matters. So give me some other options at third, which I think actually has some sneaky value right now over Oswaldo Cabrera. I mean, I'm no disrespect, but dude, you know, you can't be this good for a whole season. He might have a hot month, and those do happen, but I'm not buying it rest of the season.
I think he might be this good for the whole season. Not this good. I mean, in 21 plate appearances so far, Cabrera is slashing 400, 429, 750, and he's got a BABIP of 500. So, like, that is clearly not going to persist. But if you look at what he's projected for, I think this is sustainable. Like, a 240, 300, 400 slash line doesn't seem that out of the realm of possibility to me. One of the things that is really interesting here, though, in these projections, and I think this might be why some of us were so off on Cabrera in draft season, there's a wide range, and it's obviously playing time dependent in terms of the power output that you could expect from him. So Zips must be updated now, because Zips has him showing 430 plate appearances with 14 home runs and 9 stolen bases this season. Every other projection system still shows him as under 175 plate appearances. So I think this is one of those situations where we all looked at the projection systems and we were kind of like, oh, well, that's, I mean, four home runs and like three steals doesn't really play. And this guy isn't, you know, he's three people back on the depth chart. And I'm just kicking myself over this because this is a guy who I liked in 2023, who was on my radar in 2022. And I should have known better than to believe that DJ LeMahieu was going to stand in the way of a talented 25-year-old who can play multiple positions and slash double-digit home runs.
Yeah, but what do you think about the Yankees not believing in it either? They went, like you said, they went to go get John Birdie. So do you think that they're just going to ride the hot hand, and then if he stumbles for three, four games, here comes Birdie?
I think it might need to be more than three games at this point, given how hot the start is. But I think the Yankees are also in this very weird mold at the moment of they have Volpe is fueling this like hot start that they're on. Cabrera is fueling this hot start that they're on. Soto, there's kind of a youth movement in the Bronx at the moment. And it's weird to me that apparently all it took was Juan Soto joining the team to like fire up the Yankees, because they have some old guys too, right? Like Rizzo's the old guy, and like Judge is kind of the old guy at this point in time, which like old in baseball terms, not in like real terms. But it sort of feels like the youth movement is here and they're all vibing off of what Soto has brought to this team. And as a Red Sox fan, I hate it. As a fantasy player, I kind of want to get in on it. And Cabrera might have been one of the last options to get in on it. I just can't imagine that John Birdie doing a slightly worse IKF impersonation than IKF is going to take playing time from Oswaldo Cabrera at the moment.
Yeah. All right, Gervier, you got any other rebuttals?
Yeah, he's 25. That's cool. So it's not like he's some old timey veteran who's hanging on for dear life like John Birdie is. Sorry, John. But I just haven't seen enough consistency for Cabrera. And maybe it's unfair to ask for consistency from a 25-year-old, but I don't think that is unfair. He's at a spot now where if he's showing this, is this for real? Rest of season? All of his previous efforts, basically, he's a below average player. And I don't want to disparage Mr. Cabrera. Seems like a nice fella. But this is fantasy baseball, and even though I do believe that comparison is the death of joy, there's no fantasy baseball without comparison. That's what we do here. It's nearly impossible to avoid that. So if you compare him to DJ LeMahieu, who, when healthy, is definitely a better hitter in my mind, it could be more consistent and give this offense more of a day-to-day consistency that they're going to need when things go south, because every offense will lose it eventually. There's always the valley within a season of 162 games. So I'm not interested. I'm looking elsewhere. But if you're desperate in a 15-teamer or deeper, his positional eligibility does help you if you're trying to get through injuries like Josh Jung.
Good stuff, y'all. We always finish this show the same way. We have a love it or leave it for you. For one thing we're very into or over from baseball news this week. And Shelly, yours has me hyped. I'm going to start with you.
As someone, I think in the preseason, I was like really, really down on like the Red Sox and their prospects and just like their rotation. And they might be good. I don't know. Like they've changed like everything. Like they're basically, no one is throwing four seamers anymore. They're throwing sliders. They're throwing two seamers. They're throwing splitters. Like they're throwing, you know, the kitchen sink at everyone, and they can't hit it. Also, that they've also faced the Mariners, who still seem to have a strikeout problem. They had it last year. They tried to fix it with some of the acquisitions that they made in the offseason, but it still looks like it's a bugaboo. And then they faced Oakland. Like, enough said there. So so that's why I say it might be good. Like, I've been like shocked as a Boston fan to see all of these strikeouts. Like, where I can't remember the last time Pedro that had like this high of a strikeout rate, you know, something like that. But they might be good. I would like to see them against, you know, a Baltimore or a Yankees or a Dodgers or something like that. A little bit more competition before I say that they're actually good. But yeah, it was a really, really fun weekend.
This is the second time that Pedro Martinez has come up on this podcast in the last couple of weeks. And we should just have Pedro mentions happening all the time. I mentioned Pedro when I was defending Brian Bello as the next great thing for the Red Sox a couple of shows ago. And, you know, I'm with you, Shelley. I'm watching this and I'm like, Craig Breslow magic already happening in Boston? What is going on? I do want to temper my enthusiasm until they've thrown at least a couple of games at Fenway Park, because it's a real tough place to pitch. But I'm also cautiously optimistic about the Red Sox pitching.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Govier, what's your love it or leave it this weekend? Any thoughts you have on the Red Sox rotation as well?
Oh, yeah. I love some of those pitchers on the Red Sox rotation. And if you don't believe me, you just look at who I drafted. I drafted Tanner Houck like a madman. I thought that Tanner Houck and Brady Singer were two guys that were ADP afterthoughts who could be legitimate 12-team rosterable pitchers. Yes. And they both had excellent games. In fact, they both struck out 10, I believe, in both of their outings, Brady Singer and Tanner Houck. So that's great news for me. But I believed in Whitlock. I always liked him. It's just an injury issue. I thought Houck got, as you know, Shelley, all the maneuvering that happened a couple years ago with the bullpen to the rotation back and forth stunted some of the development there, I feel like. Now there's stability. There's a new era in Boston, so I love it. I'm a huge fan of several of their pitchers, including Brian Bello, who I drafted in our main event. I'm all about it. I love it. But there's a couple of things I want to mention because this is my opportunity to be on the show and be excited about things. It's opening day. Weekend is come and gone. And now we're here in the first full week of MLB action. Let's give a shout out to Connor Joe. Everybody was locked in on O'Neill Cruz as the leadoff hitter because we believed what we saw in spring. And it's a classic reminder. I wrote this down in bold type capital letters on my little file I have where I focus on things that are happening throughout the year. Spring only matters like 40%. It doesn't matter 100% for sure. And it's a training ground to get ready, to get reps. It doesn't really matter so much what the production is. And to me, Connor Joe being the leadoff hitter was something that was obviously planned. They didn't just show up to Miami, the Pirates, and say, hey, you know what? All right, we're here in Miami. Connor, you up for it? What do you think? You know, that didn't happen. Like, this clearly was planned out. I don't know if it was blatantly devious to have O'Neill Cruz hitting leadoff several times during spring to throw us, or just to give him some reps up there, see how he handled it. I don't know. But Connor Joe's kicking butt. He's definitely somebody you should add right now. He's the leadoff hitter on a Pittsburgh team that's on fire to start the year. And Connor Joe also had a pretty good start. It was either 23 or 2022. So I think Connor Joe likes to start fast, and then he fades. So give me some Connor Joe. Let's give him some credit. Also, Charlie Morton's not finished. I like seeing how he came out and was real solid. I know it's the White Sox, right? But Charlie Morton still has a lot to offer. People think he should retire, but he's on a really good team, and I think he'll be underrated. I was also skeptical of Christopher Sanchez. Congratulations, Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies. He's had a really solid outing. I thought he would be a candidate to follow back, have some regression this year. So far, so good for him. And then there's Will Benson. I love Will Benson. I drafted Jake Fraley and Will Benson together on multiple teams because I figured it was kind of like handcuffing a closer or a fantasy football handcuffing, like get the backup. If I have Benson and Fraley, one of them's going to play every day. So I'm just going to have two of them that are taking up one spot, but it's also a great ballpark to hit in. And it makes a lot of sense to me to have Fraley and Benson. So way to go, Will Benson. I know he's down in the order, but he also hit second or third the other day, hit a home run. This is a guy that has a lot of potential for power and speed in a great ballpark come summertime where the Reds will be partying. Also, the Royals bullpen stinks. They tried Nick Anderson. They tried Will Smith. James MacArthur's let me down. That's a real bummer. I thought MacArthur would maybe grab that role this year. And of course, my Bozo Tigers are no longer Bozo. They're just the Detroit Tigers. They've got it all. They got a great chemistry. They've got pitching. They've got Carson Kelly is a guy people should add. I'm telling you right now, Carson Kelly, as long as he stays healthy, which is a big caveat for a lot of players, Carson Kelly is the better player than Jake Rogers as the backstop for the Tigers. And I'm saying from a fantasy perspective, add Carson Kelly. Take a shot. If he stays healthy, he's going to outperform Jake Rogers by season end. Jake Rogers is just, he's just power. There's not a lot else there besides Jake Rogers' power, okay? And Carson Kelly can get on base a little bit better. He hit a 3-run dong yesterday. He went 3-for-5 on Saturday, including the game-winning RBI. So I think Kelly is a guy that I always loved. I'm so glad he's a Tiger now. It's one of those little signings that doesn't mean much to most people. But seeing Carson Kelly get signed, I was like, oh, this is great. Maybe he can finally be the guy here. He's still only 29. He's got some life left in him. So there are so many stories I'm excited about. Bryce Terang is better than we thought. There's all these guys I'd love to talk about. And really, I just couldn't focus on one thing. There's all this stuff that happened that just got me excited. Seeing Brandon Lau hit a grand slam over the weekend. And then, of course, Spencer Steer hit one last night. My guy, there's a lot of excitement. And I love all this baseball. And I can't stop talking about it. So I guess I have to stop now. I'll stop now.
I love all of that. I especially love the Bryce Terang part of this. Terang is one of my most rostered players up there with Sedan Rafaela, Nelson Velasquez. I am real hyped about what Bryce Terang is starting to do over there in Milwaukee. And the only question for me was whether the bat would be good enough to, like, the glove is good enough to keep him on the field. If the bat was good enough to keep him in my fantasy lineup, he's got speed. He hits in a great lineup. It's a great park. And so seeing him kind of come out with, he's using a new bat, they were just saying on the broadcast today. He's using that, like, that big knob bat, and it's changed the weighting on his thing. And that might be part of it. But yeah, definitely here for the Bryce Terang thing. My love it or leave it, depending on your perspective today, it is a love it for some and a leave it for many, including myself and Shelley. I do believe that Juan Soto might have been born to be a Yankee. He fits so well in those pinstripes in the Bronx. He has changed the entire complexion of this Yankees lineup. We were just talking about it with Volpe and Oswaldo Cabrera and the way that some of these young guys are responding to Juan Soto, but also, like, Juan Soto's playing great defense. It's the one part of his game that all of us were like, oh, he's not a good defender. He's throwing guys out at the plate in the ninth. He's making sliding grabs. He's up there. He's doing incredible Juan Soto things. And as of this moment in time, I just, as much as it pains me, and I know it pains Shelley for really, like, at my core Red Sox reasons, I think Juan Soto in the Bronx is, like, really good for baseball and good for Soto and good for the Yankees.
I think that you're right. and I absolutely hate to say it because I just, the trade, honestly, like, broke my heart. Like, I just needed to take, like, a couple hours and just, like, take deep breaths because it was, like, my worst nightmare ever since he was on the Nationals, and it was all those rumors of, you know, him being traded. But I haven't watched too many Yankees games. I try to avoid them as much as possible. But the clips that I have seen when he does something great, I haven't seen that Soto since his early Nationals days, and it's like, oh dear. I thought that he's going to have a big season, but I really hope that he doesn't stay a Yankee long term, just for personal reasons. But I think you are correct, Sarah, that it fits him, and he seems to be having the time of his life.
Yeah,
right. Like I said, go ahead, Govier.
Well, I may have lucked out because I wanted to take Shohei Ohtani in our main event draft last week. We had the 11th pick, and I wanted Ohtani. I'm like, if Ohtani falls to me, we're taking him. He sniped us. Whoever sniped us in front of us at pick 10 took Ohtani. So then we're like, well, I guess we got to take Juan Soto. My partner was really excited about it, Jeff. Shout out to Jeff. But I wasn't really feeling it. But now I feel like, you know what? I think we're okay. I know it's early, you know, qualifier, small sample size, but you're right. He really does kind of fit in there in those pinstripes. And the reason I hate the Yankees is not because they used to win all the time. It's because they suck all the oxygen out of the room of all the conversation when there's 30 MLB teams. That's what I've been so anti-Yankee and really pushed for people like me or you, Sarah, in the Midwest here. We're pumping up the Midwest. There's great sports teams, there's great baseball teams in the Midwest here who deserve just as much attention. And that's why I've always loathed the Yankees, not because they won all those World Series in the 90s at all. It really is just, hey, let's celebrate all the teams we got here. The Reds, and the Diamondbacks, well, the World Series last year, the Rangers finally winning it all. There's so much more fun to be had than just focusing on one team. And that's what local coverage is for. Get your local coverage in New York. Don't hog all my national coverage. It's not cool.
Yeah, I mean, all of us who are wishing the Yankees would be a little bit less obnoxious and sucking all the air out of the room are just going to have to take it right now while we watch the greatest baseball talent of our generation absolutely rake in black pinstripes. And I'm sorry, Red Sox fans, it's going to hurt. The next Ted Williams is playing in the Bronx and he looks like he belongs there. And it's killing me a little bit.
You think he'll stay there? Is that what we all believe? Like he'll re-sign there? Most likely.
They're one of the teams that can definitely afford to sign him.
Yeah.
They're one of like four teams that will pony up that cash.
Yep.
You're high pitched. The tone of your voice is saying it all. Yeah. You're like, they can do that.
I mean, the Cubs aren't going to do it. Like, this is like the bane of my existence as a Cubs fan is that every time they miss out on somebody, like they miss out on Ohtani, Cubs Twitter is like, they're saving the money for Juan Soto. I'm like, Juan Soto isn't coming to Chicago. Like, if you can't get Shohei Ohtani to come to Chicago, why do you think Juan Soto is coming to Chicago? The Cubs are saving that money for like the next Yan Gomes, right? Like, I stop pretending that you're, you know, like Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Yes, Jed Hoyer went and scouted him or whatever. They signed Shota Imanaga. That may work out really well, but like, know your bracket, people. Like, know where you're playing. And I'm sorry, Cubs fans. I don't think Juan Soto is coming to Chicago. Speaking of places where I'll be sad about that, we're all on the Twitter machine, on social media. You can find all of us. GoVA, where can people, thank you so much for joining us today. You did not disappoint at all. Where can people find you? Where can they find your work?
Oh, Sarah, you know, you're my road dog. I love doing a show with you too. Shelly and Sarah are excellent people and they do a unique show. So why would I not want to be a part of that? I'm always down to talk baseball. I love doing it. You know, when we had the Glarf draft in Cleveland, it was fun. We just talked about baseball. We had time to not be rushed and just kind of sit in it and enjoy it. And I loved that. It was a wonderful experience. It reminds me why baseball is probably the most enjoyable sport to kind of discuss with other people for many reasons. And I'll never forget that. I love that we get together every year for Glarf. Meanwhile, when Glarf's not happening, you can see me on the Palazzo Podcast, Two Whales, Two Z's. We got the YouTube channel. We just cracked 700 subscribers. Yay! We're on the quest to 1,000. So if you want to join us over there, we'd love to have you. I got some other videos that I post there related to player analysis, updates. Josh Young got hurt. Who do you jump in on now? I offer those. We got Mike Virginia and Ben Chase and Robbie Baseball and Sam and Britton, of course. I got a whole little stable of great people over Plus. So check us out. 2Ls2Zs on Twitter. I'm at MJ Govier. I do other things too. So if you want to get to know me, just pop over to that Twitter handle and DM me. Say hello.
And you definitely should. Govier is a great follow on Twitter. Like I said, fantasy baseball's number one hype man. And we're so grateful you were able to join us today. Shelly is here on Fantasy Feud every week. And where can people find you on the socials these days, Shelly?
Yeah, you can find me. I'm usually on Twitter. ShellyV_643. I will be, I don't know, maybe I should just like post photos of my little French bulldog Soto whenever I get upset when I see Soto in a Yankees uniform. So maybe you'll see a whole lot of Frenchie photos.
And good baking too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Soto the Frenchie and Soto the ball player are both excellent. And I think the only complaint from this crew is that we want to be able to cheer for Juan Soto, and the Yankees part makes it hard. I'm sure the Yankees fans are like firing stuff up right now. If you want to hit my mentions with your Yankees hot takes, I am at @BCB_Sarah. There's no H on the Sarah. Follow us at PL Fantasy Feud. And we're still a relatively young podcast. So if you have been enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and a rating. It helps other people find the show. Next week, we will be back to find out if all of our small sample takes were right or wrong, and we'll be coming at you with some more debates. Until then.